somebody will introduce themselves. Other members will find us on the way because we don't even have time. So when he arrives, I'll just let everyone grab a cup and then we sit with you and we will. Honorable Speaker.
Good morning, I'm Mr. Jacobs, and I'm the committee representing the Trust.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm
Solomon Levin, representing the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, I'm Herman Groenewald, member of the committee and representing the Northwest Province.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Dr. Jordan Gauteng.
Can you introduce yourself and
thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Sidi Matula. I'm the Director General for Public Enterprises. I'm going to ask my colleagues earlier to introduce themselves and what area of responsibility they have in the public, in the Department of Public Enterprises. Thanks.
Caroline Richardson, Acting DDG, Joint Projects Facility, responsible for SAFCO.
My name is Anthony Kamungoma, Acting DDG, Chief Investment and Portfolio Manager, responsible for Alexco and Dinel.
Edwin Richkin, Strategic Projects.
Hi, Chris Foley, I'm the DDG for Energy and Broadband.
Good morning, Sandy Hutching, CFO.
Good morning, I'm Mathiesi Mukholo, Acting DDG, Legal and Governance.
Monday Mumeya, Transport Enterprises SAS Express and Transnet.
Good morning,
Samira
Mohammed, Senior Manager at Director.
Good morning, Sam Mandwan from DPE.
Good morning, I'm Pumelele Sibisi, the Committee Secretary.
Good morning, my name is Ronelle Barreto. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning, Natasha Benjamin from PNG. Without any waste of time, I remember we requested the department to come and do the presentation, but mainly the main focus. We want to hear mostly on what is happening in the provinces, and we want to hear your successes and your key challenges. Because every time we sit, then we hear of one, you know, every year is the same story, same story, same story. We don't get to hear this was implementable and this wasn't implementable because of 1, 2, 3. And because of these challenges that we had, we've got these measures put aside to actually correct. So because this is an activist parliament, this year when 2014 comes, we want to really have a, I don't know how to call it, but to be able to say for this term, this is what has happened. How many jobs have been created? And even in the department, we want to hear, like we are here in DG, many acting. And we've been hearing this acting since last. So please, can we hear why the acting and even the gender part? Because I see in your delegation too many men. But anyway, let's not waste time. Let me not waste some time. Let's get the... Yeah, there are many. Did you count in the men? You count in them. There are many. Too many men. Can we have the presentation? If we can do that to really save time, because members have just showed me there's a joint rules meeting, and I'm now really disturbed with that. Okay, can we have them, DJ? DG, before you start, we have just been joined by Honorable Lebohani Mabija from Limpopo. Honorable Mabija is the whip of the committee, and we've joined also by Honorable Rasiriti Tau from the Northern Cape. So we've got three apologies of members, some of sick, some are in other meetings. Honorable Firstman, did you introduce yourself? Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps I should just get an indication of how much you'd like me to take in doing the presentation. I can zoom in on the areas that you've highlighted. I mean, the rest of the information is available to members, so we can engage if there are any issues that arise from that. So we can maximize on time in light of your time constraints.
I'll indicate to you as they, you'll see as they start moving, then we'll know that it's the time for. But I think we've got 1, 2, 3 who will be out. But it's fine. I'll request them to move out one by one.
Okay. Chairperson, the strategic plan of the department has been in circulation for some time now. I assume that members have looked at it and have read it, and so the intention is not to present exactly the same information that's in that document, but to focus on a few areas. I thought it's important, Chairperson, that we reflect briefly on the history of the Department of Public Enterprises. Because what the department is today is very much a reflection of where it's come from. And I think it's important that we do that so that that sets the background to where we would like to go as a department.
Honorable Mabij and Honorable Staff, that's the DG for Department of Public Enterprise. Mr. Chidi Somatuna, remember he was the DG for Trade and Industry, so he is now with us with Public Enterprise. Mm.
Thank you, Chairperson. So this is the scope of the presentation, but in light of the areas you highlighted, Chair, I will skim very quickly through the rest of the presentation and then zoom in on the areas that you've highlighted. The second set of issues would then be the role of the department, the mandate of the department. I think it's also important that ourselves and yourselves as a committee are on the same page with regard to what specifically is the mandate of the department. Then we will reflect on the challenges that we face as a country, the economy, and the role that state-owned enterprises can play in regard to that. Specifically, you know, referring to the new growth path and other policies of the government. In your letter to us, you had asked us to reflect on the previous year's performance against targets, so we will do that as well very briefly. And then we will then outline the future direction. We have in the last but one bullet point, we have a set of slides that reflect the impact that SOEs are having in the economy and in the different provinces, as it were. The annexes are just the tables which simply reproduce what was in the document, the strategy plan document that has been circulated already. Members may be aware that the Department of Public Enterprises was established sooner around the onset of our democracy as the Office for Privatization. So it was never really meant to be a permanent department in the normal sense of other departments, and that has important links with the structure of the department and the nature of the department. It's been very much, if you ask me, underdeveloped department. Because since that time, policy shifted away from privatization to restructuring of SOEs to initial public offerings and concessioning of specific assets in the SOEs. And then only really into post-2003 did the state decisively adopt the position that it intends to rely on SOEs to advance a developmental agenda. And in regard to public enterprises, that developmental agenda focuses on infrastructure and the role of infrastructure investment in underpinning the long-term growth of the economy. It's an area where much remains to be done. And I think it's in that context, therefore, that the future of the department has to be different. The nature of the department itself has to be different. So we intend, therefore, to build this department properly, to reposition it in line with the imperatives of the economy right now, particularly with respect to infrastructure. It is clear that infrastructure, because we've seen this already, about how infrastructure enabled the economy to weather the recessionary storms from which we have come from since 2008. It was only really through the investments in infrastructure that we managed to maintain positive growth of the economy as such. That role of infrastructure will continue to be important and in fact to grow, where we hope to be a lot more strategic in leveraging the contribution of infrastructure to growth and the various objectives of government. So the department has since that time identified key strategic objectives in the various sectors that the SOEs under our portfolio are responsible for, from energy to broadband to transport and to manufacturing, particularly manufacturing of defense products. Now, the mandate of the department is really to balance the interests of the enterprises, and here is to ensure that they operate efficiently and sustainably, and that they have a healthy balance sheet, as it were. A lot of the work of the department has been focused on that, ensuring that the enterprises operate as efficiently and viably as possible, and to support them in regard to balance sheets, because with weak balance sheets, these enterprises cannot deliver on the mandate. But an area that we're looking at a lot more closely is a national balance sheet, to ensure that they contribute to strengthening the balance sheet of the economy, and that means installing infrastructure which is required to support growth and therefore generate higher incomes and therefore create possibilities for growth of employment and so on. So on an ongoing basis, the mandate of the department will be in trying to balance these two dimensions, which are critical. And in that sense, I think the department is unique. There's no other department that has got the responsibility of exercising the shareholder role of the state. Others combine that role with policy, you know, such as the Department of Transport, which has SOEs under it, but also has, you know, DAF policy. Energy, same thing. We are the only department that has the exclusive responsibility for emphasizing the shareholder role and the shareholder interest, as it were. And that responsibility entails the minister appointing the boards, because that's how we exercise leverage, we exercise influence over the SOE via the boards. So the process of appointing boards, and then of course the boards appointing management, is a very, very important process in the department. It's one that the department has developed best practice tools, as it were. We're also responsible for issuing strategic intent statements, approving transactions, important transactions, and then, of course, concluding compacts, shareholder compacts with the SOEs, and then monitoring their performance on that basis and, when necessary, taking action. The board has got its own responsibilities that reflect that they are, I'm not going to spend too much time. But the other important distinction is between, as I was indicating, the shareholder role of the state, which we believe is important that it be separated from the policy and regulatory role, particularly because these enterprises often have to levy a tariff for the services they provide. They can't themselves determine the level of that tariff. An outside authority, the regulator, has to do that. But it's also important that they don't also stifle competition in the markets or the sectors in which they operate. And so there is an important separation of roles and responsibilities, which is consistent with global best practice, but nevertheless also confronts us with particular challenges, as it were, which I'll indicate later on about alignment of what the department does and with their policy departments. And in this case, I think the two key departments, or at least three key departments that come to mind, would be the Department of Transport, who are responsible for general transport policy, Department of Energy, responsible for energy policy, and the Department of Communications, responsible for communication policy, the Department of Defense, which is responsible for the defense strategy, on the basis of which the activities of DINEL are based. So we approach the role of the department from the perspective that the SOEs provide the South African state with a vehicle to drive investment in key areas. That is because if the market is left to itself to deliver the infrastructure, much of which infrastructure is not in place because of particular market failures, then there is no guarantee that the private sector would do so in as consistently and as strategically I mean, as possible. So the state, therefore, has a role to deliver on, you know, key infrastructure, networking infrastructure in particular. And the state does that via the vehicle of SOEs, which are managed in particular ways. As I indicated, they would charge a commercial tariff, ensuring that the sector pays for the internet infrastructure. They can leverage private capital markets, private capital. They can partner strategically with the private sector. And of course, they can develop particular skills and technologies which are important. They can leverage value across the supply chain, because SOEs have both customers, the people that depend on the services, if it's infrastructure, transport infrastructure, energy. The extent to which they're able to deliver that infrastructure impacts on the investment decisions of those enterprises. So there is a strategic, if you like, interdependence between what happens in the economy and the role of SOEs. And it's something which we want to unlock further going forward. But they also have suppliers. Whenever they implement a particular infrastructure investment program, they have suppliers, because that infrastructure investment program is a demand platform that generates supply in the market. So the strategy of the department going forward would be that we would be leveraging these interdependencies, because it's only when you do that SOEs can really drive growth, really unlock potential in the economy for higher levels of growth, higher levels of investment economy-wide, and higher levels of employment. That is how SOEs play an important role in employment share. It's not necessarily the jobs that they create when they roll out infrastructure. Those are temporary jobs. So when ESCOM has finished the plants that they are building right now, you know, some of those jobs will be lost. But it is the jobs that are created when that electricity is supplied to customers in the market. It is a job that are created when enterprises use the transport network that Transnet would be rolling out as well. So in a sense, therefore, the role of infrastructure in job creation and growth is precisely based on that. It's not those jobs of people that are rolling out. Those are important, clearly, but it's the jobs that are created through the value chain, and equally the skills that are developed in the process of that. This, in a sense, Chair, gives you a feel for the sort of strategic approach that the department will be taking going forward, building on the platforms that have been created around governance of SOEs, the relevant tools that are there, which I'll reflect about very briefly. But to conclude this section would be to again recall the challenges which are familiar, so I'm not going to spend time on that, what the economy confronts and where we think SOEs as an integral part of a developmental state, you know, can help address as we go forward. This slide outlines the policy frameworks that we locate our work within, starting with the performance evaluation framework administered by the Minister of Performance Monitoring, in terms of which the department and the minister have made certain commitments in regard to the 12 outcomes. You are familiar with the 12 outcomes. One of them is on an efficient and reliable infrastructure network, and within that there are certain specific commitments that we have undertaken as a department. The new growth path is very much something which we've been working with as well, in regard to what the contribution of the SOEs would be to that. And already, in terms of industrial policy, we have identified ways in which SOEs can contribute. So there are, if you like, streams of work which we are currently involved with as a way of repositioning SOEs and and really redefining their direction going forward. This slide indicates just what the magnitude of the infrastructure challenge is. Between 1994 infrastructure and 2004, infrastructure was growing at 5% of GDP. The norm should actually have been 10% of GDP. As a result of that gap, we're sitting with a shortfall of 1.5 trillion rand, which is what the challenge and the scale of the challenge in regard to rollout of infrastructure that we confront going forward. Now, clearly, the importance of this slide is to actually demonstrate that this can't all come from the fiscus. So we're going to need to find creative ways of finding the money to close this gap. And that money is available. It sits in the private capital markets. It sits in the customers of the SOEs, many of whom, in fact, are very willing to strategically partner with government and the SOEs in putting in place some of that infrastructure. So going forward, we would hope to create a political basis within the government that allows us to a lot more strongly, creatively to leverage that capital. And so a lot of the work and a lot of the discourse with regard to what we do as a department will entail matters of this nature. This is a slide that illustrates the virtuous cycle I was talking about. Because if you are strategic and you take a long-term view of what is the infrastructure plans that you have developed for the future as possible. Because part of the problem, and I'll make this point again in a moment, is that if the SOEs rely on their balance sheets, they generally, of necessity, will take a short-term view. Because they look at the balance sheet. When in fact, actually, the requirements of the economy are much larger. But if you plan a lot more long-term, you are able to send signals to the markets. So the suppliers of SOEs and their customers are able to invest on the basis of the long-term plans that you have. If those plans are funded, it's even a much stronger signal for them to invest. And in doing so, they expand the range of economic activity and therefore maximize the opportunities for growth and job creation. And this is the sort of virtuous cycle that we think we want to unlock, but it's going to test us in terms of our ability to plan properly over the long term. And this is planning beyond 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, which is possible. We just have not had that discipline and that culture in our country, but it's possible. Other countries in a similar position as us are doing this with great success. So there is much to learn from our peers, as it were, as a country. Briefly, to reflect on our vision, therefore, as a department, is to provide effective shareholder management of SOEs. This is a role which the department has really begun to master, as it were. Because here, too, there's a lot of best practice in regard to how the state governs SOEs. We are availing ourselves to that best practice. follow the sort of norms and principles of shareholder management in the SOE. But we are saying that we need to enhance our vision to reflect particularly this dynamic virtuous cycle I was talking about. So in a sense, therefore, you know, going forward, we will be promoting a paradigm shift that will see us interacting more strategically with key parts of government, the National Planning Commission, for example, as well as other players. I wanted to show you these two slides very quickly. I won't spend too much time on them. This is the current situation where we're saying that if planning on infrastructure is dependent largely or exclusively on the balance sheets of the SOE, it's unsustainable because instead of leading infrastructure investment, we'll be lagging it. Limited to the strength of the balance sheets, and we know that some of those balance sheets are not actually in a strong position. The overall outcome would be suboptimal outcomes in the economy. We want to move to this scenario where, based on long-term planning and leveraging several potential funding stakeholders, we can actually lead SOE investment. And then we'd also be able to leverage procurement, because if you procure on the basis of long-term plans, we call this fleet procurements, then you're able to unlock value and drive investment a lot more strongly and unlock activity among the customers and suppliers of SOEs, and thereby enhance growth and industrial development and employment outcomes. That shift will entail us doing different things, planning much more smartly, being a lot more innovative around funding, a lot more innovative about procurement, focusing on productivity in the SOEs, and also driving transformation. It's also going to require that we put in place appropriate supportive policy and regulatory environment, as well as entering into compacts with different stakeholders. For the department itself, we will be looking at rethinking the structure of the department. I'll say something about that, Chair, because you remarked about acting people in the department. But I think part of it is to deal with that, but deal with that in conjunction with repositioning the department to deliver on this new paradigm shift. We will continue to strengthen and improve our role of oversight on SOEs. We will address the policy environment. We will integrate our work with the work of departments like trade and industry. And I've indicated our commitments in Outcome 6. This slide articulates the challenges, Chair. I want to assure you that we are constantly thinking about our challenges and how to overcome them. I've indicated that a lot of what SOEs have to deliver is dependent on the appropriate policy and regulatory environment, and often that creates blockages and dampens the signals and the incentives that SOEs require to achieve certain standards of performance and outcomes, as it were. We need to understand the environment in which these entities operate. This is a challenging an environment. If you look, for example, in aviation, you know, the environment in which SAA operates, we need to have a very deep understanding of that environment. The envi- environment around energy and the changing, you know, market structure of for energy and electricity in our country, as well as transport. We will need to coordinate a lot more closely. And then, of course, this committee will be aware that there is a presidential review on state-owned enterprises, which is currently doing work, the outcomes of which we expect could have ramifications for the department and the role that it will play. So we are closely watching that space and seeing what the outcomes of that will mean for DPE. Chair, to come back to the section that you particularly asked for, to say what were our plans for the previous financial year and what the outcomes have been. The next few slides deal with that, starting with the area of electricity, where the commitment was to ensure that Eskom delivers on additional capacity. The progress in regard to that is that certain megawatts of electricity has been committed, and Eskom is in the process of delivering on that. I think you are familiar with that program. There was a policy decision and specific undertakings by the department in regard to independent power producers. We are working with Eskom around the necessary consequential structural adaptation to Eskom as an enterprise, where they are already beginning to ring fence procurement activities in preparation for this completely changed in the structure of the energy market as we go forward. The Pebula Modular Reactor Company, PMR, as you know, the policy decision was to abandon this and to put this program under care and maintenance. We have been working with PMR to downsize the company. We have now already reduced it to 9 staff. The IP is being packaged and evaluated in preparation for it being put into a care and maintenance position in a particular host company. We undertook to embark on the restructuring of DNEL. This ongoing work, we have reviewed the business model of DNEL. We've identified ways in which we can begin to shift DNEL into a position of financial sustainability, including, again, you know, particular restructuring of the enterprise. We are undertaking to review the remuneration structures and policies of SOEs. A panel was established. It's concluded its work. The minister is championing that report and the recommendations, starting with cabinet. So he's gone to cabinet, and cabinet has said, well, you know, before you interact more publicly with us, do a few more consultations. So the minister will be doing those, and I'm sure there will be an opportunity to engage in the period ahead with the outcomes of that work. We have undertaken to ensure that the CEO's positions that are vacant and board positions that are vacant are being filled. Again, there you are aware that very quickly upon his appointment, the minister has moved to, you know, ensure that the leadership gap in various places in the SOEs and in the department, you know, are filled. I was appointed chair as part of that drive of the minister to fill key leadership positions in the SOEs. With regard to Alex Coe, you know about the outcomes of the land claim, the consequential or legal obligations that Alex Coe and the department has with regard to that community out there. This is work in progress. with a few key milestones achieved. The creation of the township, the transfer of assets to the community, and some of the land rights that arise from that land claim. We did say also that we will work with Department of Transport on new rail policy going forward, with particular emphasis on Transnet freight rail. We have just concluded the first phase of that study, which begins to point us into directions in which we could potentially take rail policy in our country and to change the rail infrastructure, the structure of rail infrastructure in our country. With regard to Transnet's freight business and operations, this is an area of great concern to various customers of Transnet, where we do need to enhance efficiencies. And so we've developed a system called the National Corridor Performance Management System to track improvements in the operations, efficiency of operations of Transnet rail. We had said that we would also look at branch lines, what happens to branch lines. We are working with Department of Transport, so there are emerging policy proposals on how we can tackle the whole issue of branch lines. So again, work in progress here. We said we'll look at strategic options for SAA going forward, including the possibility of hiving off SAA Technical, so that it's placed in a position where it can leverage the wider market for aircraft maintenance and services, and not just, you know, do it for SAA. So again, this is ongoing. We expect to engage with SAA on in regard to their ideas and proposals in this area. We said on the back of the Industrial Policy Action Plan led by the Department of Trade and Industry that we will align SOEs with regard to that, particularly with regard to deepening local procurement, localization of various activities. And so again, this is work in progress. There is something called the Competitive Supplier Development Program, which I'm sure you're familiar with. That's ongoing. We have now laid a very strong basis with SOEs to deepen that work, and to particularly in preparation for future planned investments by the SOEs. We've said that we need to begin to think out of the box with regard to the, you know, the capitalization of SOEs. We know that they can't now rely on the fiscus. And you'll see when we look at our budget figures, the DPE budget has been declining quite rapidly and significantly because we are no longer in a position to make transfers to SOEs. That means we need to be thinking a lot more strategically about how we capitalize them. And so there is work around developing capital structure framework, which is to estimate, you know, what some of the required quantum of capital would be for their investment plans going forward, and just trying to manage that space a lot more effectively. We said we will also begin to explore the role of the private sector and smart partnerships with the private sector, with particular the independent power producers, where Eskom is already beginning to conclude, you know, a few contracts with independent power producers, so that the private sector plays an increasingly stronger role in the provision of electricity. Because the budget for that period, and you will see that the budget is still rather large compared to what it is in the period ahead, and that is because, as I indicated, there were a few transfers to SOEs of several hundred million rand that have ended. But as you will see, we have spent about 88.5% of our budget. We still have a few days in the remainder of the financial year, so that number might increase. Now, I'll flip very quickly through the plans of the department going forward, starting with the high-level structure of the department. This is really the leadership echelon of the department. I might just add that in light of where we want to take the department, in light of the strategic focus which I outlined, there will be some tweaking of the structure. And so to the extent that talking about positions and vacancies, to the extent that there are still some vacancies, or rather, let me put it this way, people in acting positions, it's because we wanted to give ourselves some time to reflect on where we want to go to and whether the structure is aligned with that. Where there are no changes that are necessary, Chair, we are in the process of filling those positions. So as we speak, we've advertised some of those positions. We will be interviewing very shortly for some of those positions. Others will follow a bit later once we are clear around just how we want to modify, tweak the structure of the department. And as I said, this is a small department, which I think it has to grow. I think if you are taking on the sort of challenge that we've outlined and the mandate that we're proposing for the department going forward, you will have to capacitate this department properly. You'll have to do so for several reasons. But key among them is that if the department is going to exercise oversight over large enterprises like your Eskom and Transnet, at least those two for a start, then it has to have the expertise. Otherwise, you have an imbalance of power, and it'll be as a result of that imbalance of power, Chair, where you will be saying, but why are things not changing? We keep saying the same thing. Why is it not changing? So we recognize that challenge, and part of it is going to capacitate the department so that when the minister cracks the whip, as he will have to, the department is able to come in and back up those, if you like, directives that the minister will issue in regard to what he would like to see happen among the SOEs, as it were. The establishment has grown in the period between April 2010 and now, March, from 168 to 185. When you increase the number of posts, you have the effect of increasing your vacancy rate. But because it's a small department, 8 vacancies in percentage terms are large, simply because it's a small department. But I suppose we have also been given our marching orders with regard to filling vacancies. So we understand that imperative. The President spoke about it in the State of the Nation, and we are responding to that. I expect that by the middle of this year, which is by end of the first quarter of the next financial year, the key vacancies at the top, you know, the DDGs will have filled those. It is at least our intention to do that. But we are calling on our HR unit to continually manage and lead a process of filling all of the vacancies. The issue of the challenges around how we effectively fill these vacancies is something which we'll say something about that in a moment, because already some challenges are apparent for us in regard to attracting the right kind of skills in the department. That slide speaks to employment equity, the picture as regards employment equity. You can see that overall, I think it's a fairly good picture in regard to particular areas, but clearly there's always room to improve. Chair, there's always. Now let me look at the our targets with regard to gender. My sense is that we are not so far out, so there probably is room for improvement, but it's not an insurmountable gap as regard to gender. Of course, this is high level, so perhaps I've got a colleague here from corporate services who can give you a comfort that we do have a handle on the gender equity dimension of our HR. This is the budget going forward, and as I indicated, Chair, you see that from this current financial year to the next, it drops quite significantly. And this is largely because of reduced transfer payments, which I've already indicated, slightly offset by a modest increase with regard to compensation of employees, largely to do with adjustments, annual adjustments, and then, of course, the increase of the establishment. This is the economic classifications. I'm not going to spend too much time on that, except to make the observation that you will see that the leading item is compensation of employees, and that's because this is a knowledge department, it's a knowledge organization, and therefore we rely on brain matter, and therefore people. People are probably the most important strategic resource of the department. It's one that we need to prepare and nurture properly. And we intend to do that going forward. There's a very good basis. By the way, I was very pleasantly surprised to discover the expertise that lies in the various components of the department, some of which has been lost in the period where the department didn't have stable leadership and so on. But there is a basis, I think, to build on capacitating the department, and that's going to require a very clear strategy how you do So when you have an MBA in finance or an expert in aviation or energy, and they have a choice either to go to government or to go to the private sector, we know where they go, and we know it's because they'll get well paid. If they come to government, then they are motivated by something more than money. And I think that we really need to inculcate in our youth the spirit of serving in the public. It's a space that has got its own fulfillment and rewards, as it were. Not necessarily about money, but the exposure and the fun dealing with all these matters that we deal with. A lot of people need to be made to appreciate that and to use that to attract them. We can't just compete on salaries alone. And I think this is a fundamental challenge that this department has faced. They've tried various innovative things to deal with that challenge, but I think we can do a lot more in that space. These are the transfers for the current financial year, which will not continue over the medium term. I'm not going to spend too much time on that. This is the pie chart giving the breakdown of the transfers, and you'll see that the PBMR was consuming the largest resources of all SOEs, I think. 48%, yes, PBMR, yeah. And that's why, you know, the state had to really take a decision to say, you know, are we going to keep on pumping money in this thing, given other competing needs, you know, on the fiscal. And so I think it's a decision that was always going to confront us. Now, the rest of the presentation indicates the priorities going forward, and I'm again going to skim through all of those very quickly. With regard to administration, this is where the corporate services of the department are managed from here. A number of cost-saving initiatives already embarked upon will continue going forward. We'll be active in regard to recruitment, as well as ensuring that the governance of the department is as sound as possible. It's a well managed department. No qualified audits for the last several years, I think. So I'm happy, Chair, because I came from a department where we were a clean administration, no qualified audits. So I think that we would like to maintain that. In this program, we're also doing this thing of the frameworks for monitoring, as well as the management of the investment activities of the SOEs. I spoke about the capital structure. That will be something very important going forward, and we have already in a meeting recently with the Treasury have agreed to cooperate with them to establish more sustainable, you know, framework rather than this firefighting that often happens. Manage the legal obligations in regard to the land claims, as well as redirecting at least, you know, some of the SOEs that are affected. You know, Alexco is one of them. Safcol is another, you know, whose direction going forward is clearly going to be impacted by the land claims. This is the framework that the department uses for the oversight. starting firstly with a mandate, and the mandate arises from the policy direction. Going forward, it's going to be the industrial policy, the new growth path, that then leads to a strategic intent for each of the SOEs to say, what do we expect of Transnet? What do we expect of ESCOM? What do we expect of TINEL, and so on and so forth. Once all of that is pinned down, we it reflected in a shareholder compact, and then the SOE then reduces those commitments into the corporate plan, and then we monitor that through quarterly reports. There is something which you may have heard already, the dashboard, where we look at various indicators, on an ongoing basis, on a monthly basis. We check the finances of the department, the operations, some of the efficiencies we want to derive. So all in all, I think the department has got a good platform. We just need to put this thing to good use. And I think that the SOEs are slowly coming on board as well. Clearly, there will be contestations because where they have enjoyed almost freedom to do whatever they want to do, when you start to kind of intensify oversight and you come closer, there will be contestation. So the oversight role of the department is not uncontested. So we think that there's scope to shift the boundaries a lot more closely to what goes on in SOEs. And we think that we have to, as the current leadership of the department, we've got to move this thing a bit further. I think there's scope for us to do that. These are budgets, Chair. I'm not going to spend time. Let me just try and rush through this so that we can make a lot of time for discussion. In energy and broadband, we focus on ESCOM and Infraco. And in regard to that, these are some of the priorities. We need to develop engineering, procurement, and construction management capacity in the department, because that way we can be able to monitor the build program of ESCOM, and particularly the role that ESCOM will play in the future energy and electricity industry in South Africa. Then there is the whole thing of unlocking the private sector. This is probably the most exciting new area of focus for the department, how we leverage the private sector. Because the appetite is there. It's a very strong appetite in the private sector, but how do you leverage it a lot more effectively? The scope to realign the SOEs in the ICT broadband sector between Infraco and Centec, we will be trying to leverage those opportunities that are there going forward. This is a budget for that area. Legal and governance is a very important area where we engage with the shareholder compacts. We provide legal advice to various transactions that SOEs enter into where they need approval, as well as just the maintenance of the highest possible standards of governance and drawing from best practice with regard to governance. Our focus areas going forward would be to conclude the residual. There's a lot of residual items with regard to the winding down of Aventura, which will need to be tied down. PBMR, again, the winding down has got legal issues that we will be looking at going forward. This is the budget for that area. Again, I'm not going to spend too much time on that. In manufacturing, we're really looking at DNL, as well as Safcol, and in regard to both, as I indicated, the idea would be to ensure that we restore TINEL to financial sustainability. Denial has been in the red for some time right now, and I think it requires very decisive intervention. We need to take the hard, tough decisions around what the future of Denial is going to be. So I won't spend too much time on that. South Call is another one, where 60% of the land area with forests is subject to land claims. The outcomes of those are such as to really force a rethink of what the role of South Call should be. Some say, well, maybe the state should dispense of this entity and let the private sector run the forests, as it were. Some of you say, well, actually, if communities are going to now own forestry assets, they're going to need a vehicle that's going to assist them to optimize those assets, and that therefore SAFCOL now needs to assume on a clear and explicit developmental mandate, in addition to commercial mandate that they have. So this is some thinking that we're doing in the department right now. We will generate a position paper so that we can then canvas a debate with other stakeholders in government, Department of Land Affairs, so Land and Rural Development, and other stakeholders. This is a budget for that area. Transport Enterprises focuses on the activities of Transnet and SAA. And as I said, with regard to Transnet, we have already assumed very tough targets in the Minister's Delivery Agreement to ensure that Transnet achieves those volumes in regard to freight by 2014. We think that they can achieve this. We think that they need to be forced to achieve these targets as such. We've seen that they are able to increase, you know, volumes and efficiencies, but we need to give them some stretch targets. And so, for the period ahead, this is what we are proposing. There will also be work around branch lines, which I referred to, as well as the introduction of a private operator in the port of Nkuha. In aviation, it is to continue to get a good handle on SAA and ensure that SAA is also financially sustainable. They have come out of a bailout about 2 years ago. They need to fulfill certain conditions, and among them would be to look at how to reposition SAA technical and other operations within the airline. This is the budget. The final area is what is called joint project facility. This has emerged as the area of the department where we do transversal sort of cross-cutting thinking and projects, including researching different scenarios for different SOEs and how these SOEs can contribute a lot more strongly. There is no place, line function in the department for that. This is an area that has kind of emerged as a sort of the thinking center of the department, which we would like to strengthen and reconfigure, because where we want to go to is going to quite test our intellectual capabilities, as it were. So a number of interesting things happen here. Our monitoring of the skills development activities of SOEs, transformation, which includes matters like compliance with BEE, how they procure, and all of that. Youth development, which is something which the minister feels very strongly about, to say, you know, we've got to, as part of skills development and employment, we've got to also give special focus to youth. And of course, the activities around the African agenda. There's scope for us to maximize our relationships with the continent and opportunities, strategic relationships and partnerships on the continent for SOEs. Then, of course, local and provincial economic development. We want to create a window so we can see how all of this activity of the SOEs and what they contribute to the economy, how it looks like from a provincial sort of and local window. And this is the budget. Chair, the rest of the slides deal with the spatial impacts of SOEs, and the it's obvious that it will be the largest SOEs, the ones with the largest footprint, national footprint, and the largest resources, that will make the greatest contribution to provincial economies, and Transnet is one of them. That slide speaks to with regard to current programs, you know, what the impact, the breakdown of provincial impact is. And you'll see that the Northern Cape, as a result of the iron ore line, you know, is, at least for now, you know, the province where Transnet has greatest economic impact. But for the rest, like KZN, there's already a lot of sunk investment, so these figures don't reflect the already investment that has been made, and all the way across to the other provinces, as it were. So to integrate a provincial perspective in the at least the programs of the SOEs is something that we will encourage, because we know it's important. It's important for the economy, and it's something that is important for this community. This speaks more generally to the macro impact of Transnet with regard to their build program. Now, these are huge amounts that tend to be invested, and clearly the impact on employment, the impact on skills, the impact on capital formation in the economy will be significant. And often the capital formation in the economy will often be led by SOEs. The private sector obviously is an important contributor to capital formation, but the SOEs have the possibility. And if you think about the envelope of 800 billion rand of planned infrastructure going to the future, that's huge. And that has the possibility to unlock even bigger investments going forward. This speaks to Eskom. And again, you know, there is a possibility for Eskom, particularly where they are building infrastructure, to really make a contribution to those economies.
Can I stop you there so that members who will be leaving, maybe they will ask questions?
Okay.
On what we have already presented, if maybe for what we have not yet presented, if there are questions,
sure.
Then for us who will be remaining,
sure.
We will,
okay.
The secretary will note the responses.
Okay.
Members, I know that we've got another meeting, but can we have some questions?
Okay, no, thank you very much, Chair. I hope we could have had more time with the department, and one must say the presentation so far, even if it's not concluded, but it's quite an interesting presentation, because it really gives one a clear picture of the role of the department. That's why we were grasping that. You see, now what it means is that the devil is with the SOEs. That's where obviously we need to strengthen our oversight role as a select committee, as opposed to the department. Of course, on those overarching broad policy positions.
and where we think there's a need for political intervention in some of these SOEs and so forth. The just quick, I don't know whether it will be comment or questions, Chair. But being from the Northern Cape, I would definitely say with the latest comment around the Transnet infrastructure investment in your Kurumansation area so far. If I were to really raise my views, I would say let that process be reversed, because you see, if you look at your initial areas that you have identified, the developmental aspects, issues of youth development, issues of economic growth, blah, blah, blah. It is our view that that entire investment, in actual fact, does not speak to all those things. It is an investment that is not geared at addressing the interests of the poor, but instead, it is the state again subsidizing private capital. Because the end result of the investment that goes in there, the beneficiary is private capital again. Yes, it is important, we agree, that the role of private capital is quite strategic in unbundling or unlocking our economic potential, and that investment should then speak to those kind of things. But insofar as we had studied what is happening there and the kind of investment that will be going in there, it doesn't really speak to those kind of things. So really, if one had his view right, I would have said no. It is not correct for us to really conclude that it's going to work for the interest in the interest of the people of that area, because it's an infrastructure, rail infrastructure, put in place for whom? Private capital, mine, take the product out of the area, no development, at the end everything ends up in Saldanha. What does the benefit that people benefit there? They are then just what? Ordinary labor suppliers. They just go in there, they go mine, they go workers, mine workers, take out the product, and that's it. After the mining operations, whether it's 550 years or 100 years, what is left there? Those people are again unemployed, left unskilled, and all those sorts of things. So that is the attitude of us from the province. We grilled when you presented the organogram, but Honorable Lenson will tell why that happened, because he pointed at something to say. Trevor Manuel will definitely not be happy with some of the things as you presented them there. You will. DJ.
But I hope he does.
The second issue would be on the shareholder compact. You in the presentation you didn't tell us exactly how many SOEs have already finalized that process, so that we are then able to follow up on that to check whether that is then the case. I might be confused, but I'll need the assistance, and I hope, Chair, I will still be around by the time the DG responds. You speak of the capitalization of the SOEs, but then you also speak of the shifting of over-reliance on fiscals. Now, I'm asked, maybe it's my limited knowledge, if you capitalize, where do you get the capital? Because my assumption would be that you would then rely on Treasury to give you the resources to capitalize. Wouldn't that, dialectically speaking, be then contradicting the very same objectives that you want to achieve? Or maybe there's a different view on how the department seeks to capitalize the departments and so forth. Then the last one, Chair, is around the issue of the thin line, man, between the line departments, or I don't know how to call them, line departments and the Department of Public Enterprises. You have, okay, fine, I heard the DG speaking about, for instance, transport would then deal with the overarching policy matters and so forth, and then Lona, you a level of oversight, are you saying the Department of Transport does not have any oversight role over, for instance, SAA? It can't call the SAA to come and account, or it can't hold SAA accountable to the department and so forth. Because on an annual basis, we also deal with the Department of Transport strategically. So, or interestingly, this very same committee also is a cluster that also oversees transport. And so there is that level of temptation at times, especially when it comes to the presentation of debates in the House. So it would be quite interesting if that clarity could be provided. The same committee deals also with what is this? It's communication, and there are SOEs that you handle or look after and so forth, or oversee. Now, the temptation would always be once the committee then calls the department to come and make presentations or whatsoever, that thin line of asking about those particular SOEs, so an expectation of the department to account about the operations and success and functions of. So if that that line can be clarified to me, I'll be very happy. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me join Honorable Dow in actually appreciating this presentation. One Chairperson honestly wouldn't have serious questions.
Mm.
When you are looking at the manner in which the presentation, you know, has been put, I was sent to Honorable Dow. It is for the first time. I'm not buying your face, DJ. No, I'm not.
That's wrong, even if you do.
You know, I'm one person who would go through a presentation a day before and draft questions. I'm sent to Honorable Dow, look, man, I am busy, you know, deleting all these questions that I had prepared because presentation is actually responding positively to them. I mean, when something is good, we have to say, because there will be times when we have to hammer on you. But when you are doing good, let's give you the accolade. Just to Chairperson.
Let me explain. That's the way we requested the department to do, because, you know, I know the members of the select committee, what they want. So that's why the DG did all that.
No sense, Chairperson. Honestly, he was spot on. Chair, there is this challenge. Honorable Gao is just, you know, making, not necessarily a point on it, but just, you know, passing by. The DG is talking of the review of the mandates of SOEs. Understandably, it's a mandate of the Interministerial Committee. And our sent Honorable Dow, how do you begin now to ask a question from the DG? Because it's not necessarily on his desk. It's a political kind of a function. But nevertheless, when you look in DG at these sums of amount of money which you are actually dishing out to this SOEs, vis-a-vis looking at, I wouldn't say they are political mandate, I would say in terms of implementation, Chairperson, how does the department, you were very careful in terms of trying to put to us, also wanting to avoid overstepping the road in terms of oversight. But at the end of the day, even if you don't answer today, but I think at the back of your mind as the head of the department, you should have a way, Chairperson, of saying, are these large sums of monies ultimately achieving, realizing the goals of the department? I understand, of course, we would have a role, but for us the main door, if I would call it a door, would be the department door before we go and knock in the doors of the various SOEs. It's just that we don't have time. We would narrate to you some bad, you know, lack of a better word, bad experiences that we have had during our oversight visits to these SOEs. But we hope that with now the department looking as emphatic as you are portraying to us, we would, you know, go somewhere. Chair, on a lighter note, there is this slide on the organograph, page slide 29. I'm looking there, Chair. I'm comparing colored versus white this time, not colored versus Indian or black or African, deliberately, DG. And I'm looking at your target for starters. And as I say to Honorable Dow, wow, that's where the Honorable Minister Trevor would have problems. Look at your target. Look at your target. Also, I'm not opening a debate, but I'm drawing it for consideration. If you're looking at your colored, your colors there. And I think Honorable Khonevai will bear with us. It is not this department's own making that you have African, Indian, colored, white. If this has to be challenged, Chairperson, they must go to Start South Africa. Because that's where it starts. And then the department will then follow suit. Now, if you look at that, DG, your target, your female color, it's 4.5%, and your male 4.4%. And your target for whites is 4.7%, 4.5%. And I'm beginning to ask why. You look at now your achievements. When it comes to your male color, you know, you have struggled a lot. Of course, there's an element of appreciation with your female color. Now you go to white. I'm not racist, but my belief, Chairperson, is that a road to non-racialism is recognition of one's race. Then I become non-racial, but I must be from somewhere. That's my political conviction. So I'm not racist, but look at your wife. And one would begin to ask, has there been a deliberate effort to meet the targets of that employment equity plan as was adopted by the department? That is it, Chairperson.
Don't respond to come with your questions.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I will not respond. Otherwise, in the first place, I also want to thank the DG for this presentation, and I really hope that they are looking at your salary and that you're on the payroll in Parliament. I see you was a lot in paper last week sometimes, so I believe they look after you. Right, thank you. Honourable Chairperson. Chairperson, I think that is very easy to say. We must develop the infrastructure in South Africa. It is very broad. There's a lot of entities into this department. And before we started with development infrastructure, I believe we must look into the skills. The people must be skilled. Otherwise, we have no chance to develop any infrastructure. And therefore, the most important thing is we must have places to train the people into this position so that they can do the job at the end of the day. And then we can create jobs. After we've got skilled people and we've got the infrastructure, then we can create jobs to develop this infrastructure. And I think if I read this document in the right way, that is the track you are on. And really, I appreciate it, because if we listen to our state president in the beginning of this year, the main thing for this year is job creation. But then I want to get to page 26 on Transnet. And I think Honorable Fabio has also mentioned it. And that is the job creation in different provinces. And if you are looking into the time frame there, it is from 2008, maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I read there, up to 2018. And if you divided that 10 years into this employment creation, that's very few in all the provinces. So over 10 years, 20s, if we the Northwest province where I'm coming from, it's 27,891, and divided into 10, so it is nothing for 10 years. So I think if we look at it as it is here, it looks very impressive. But if we are going further into the detail, it's not so good. So I think we must look, that is not really what we are asking for, that there must be huge job creation in the following couple of years. And you've also said that we must look into our youth. I think that is where everything is lying for the future of South Africa. We must look into the youth and see that they've got skilled and trained so that they can do the job. And then especially in your department, if you want to have take the lead in South Africa, you must have also that skilled people in your structures. Otherwise, we can't assist people. So that is very important for me, to have skilled people here in the structures as well, so that they can help the people out there.
I thought you were going to ask
No, I just give a lecture before I start. and really, you're talking about the reposition of the department. That's also it is very important. And I'm going with you. If we will reposition the department, you need also skilled people in your department. Right, now I'm coming to the questions, Honorable Chair. AlexCorp is worrying me a lot, because that is about land claims. We've had meetings with the people out of that region, and the people are very unhappy. They are not paid, and I do not think everything is on track there at this stage. So maybe the department must do some investigation into that area again, so that we can have first-hand information from that side, that we can know what is going on at this stage in AlexCorp. Because a year ago, the people was very unhappy, and they was not assist from. They've gotten any assistance from the department side. Transnet, I want that is also a long ongoing issue about the branch lines. I do not know where we stand at this stage. If you can just inform us a bit more about the branch lines. And also, in which areas are you target for these type of things? And then with all the trouble we've had the past 2 weeks in Japan about nuclear, I'm very worried about that. In South Africa, if we're looking into the pebble bed middle reactors, what is the future planning in South Africa? I know there was a lot of investigations ongoing. But now with this problem we've had in Japan, what are your vision for the future? Yeah, okay. I think, Chair, I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
I was about to say, just stop it there so that the DG can respond to what he can respond to now and then, so that Honorable Tau is also leaving. DG?
Thanks, Chair, for those questions. I suppose if I just take the first question around Transnet and decision line and all of that, and I suppose I think the questions from the last honourable member seems to indicate that we do need to add another dimension, I think, to the planning around investments by SOEs, because some of the investments would be there'll probably be no scope to, you know, take this line, you know, from Northern Cape and put it somewhere else, because this is infrastructure that's meant to leverage the resources, the mineral resources of the country, and those resources are found in specific regions of the country. So there will probably be not too much scope, but maybe elsewhere there is scope to make choices about where you want to locate particular types of infrastructure. But it would seem to me that the one dimension that we need to introduce is the spatial dimension, provincial dimensions, and to ask ourselves if any FOE is going to implement a particular type of infrastructure, what must be the interaction with the provincial government? How does that fit in or affect the provincial economic development strategies, so that we are sure that investment hits a number of objectives and not just one objective. It can ensure that we take the resources out and never leverage those activities economically, but we can also contribute to provincial economic development. Now, clearly, from what you are saying, is that is not the case with this investment. Similarly, I don't know what the deal is with, you know, the power plants. Perhaps my colleagues will, you know, Medupe in Limpopo and Kusile, you know, what the planning of that is in relation to the provinces and what the provinces are, you know, the challenges and plans are for development in that space. I hear you. You're making a very important set of concerns in regard to this area. I don't want to defend this because I think that it does illustrate that something is not right with the planning. But you see, again, it goes back to the issue around planning, you know, the quality of planning in our country for development. I think we have a long way to go. I think planning is fragmented, planning is silo-based, and where you are trying to achieve one thing, you create other sorts of problems, which have the tendency to undermine, you know, what you're trying to achieve. So that's all I can really say, you know, as far as this is concerned. But having said that, we, in regard to the indicators that we'll be monitoring, you know, we've got this dashboard, which I'm sure you've heard about, you know, which monitors financial indicators, operational indicators, and then we are now adding socio-economic indicators.
and those indicators are with regard to skills. So we're looking at what the SOEs are doing in regard to skills. So it's now also getting into the shareholder compact and so on. I think that we need to start to grapple with developmental indicators so that when we look at a particular investment proposal, I don't know how much of the, how much you can go back and try and realign. You know, perhaps we it's really about looking to the future. You know, how do we ensure that an investment complies or takes on board both financial, operational, but also developmental indicators. I think this is, you know, something that we need to, and I think it's possible. My sense that it's possible to do that, but you'd require a different, qualitatively different way of planning around that and engagement with the SOEs. Now, this is another point that illustrates how sometimes gaps arise in the department's oversight role. So although the oversight role has got good intentions, but it is exercised in ways that allows for slippage, where suddenly the SOE kind of drifts into doing its own thing. And Transnet, the pipeline, I think, you know, our concerns as a department with regard to the Transnet pipeline from Durban to Gauteng and the cost, just the cost escalation of that, seems to suggest that something must have gone wrong there that we need to try and understand, you know, what drives this cost escalation. Now, I can tell you that we are asking very uncomfortable questions in regard to that. And the point is that as a shareholder, we are always going to be asking uncomfortable questions. The moment we stop asking SOEs uncomfortable questions, the moment we have lost the plot with regard to what is required. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with a shareholder asking what accounts for this increase in costs. And let's look at that. Let's work with you to look at, investigate all of that. So I'm saying, therefore, that there are strategic policy issues that the first question raises around how do we do planning? How does a developmental state that maintains SOEs also use those OCEs to address spatial iniquities in our economic development as a country? And how do we then direct SOEs? It's a big, complex issue, unfortunately. But I'm sure, you know, what you're saying about that Transnet session could equally be the case around, you know, the Eskom new power plants that are being built in different parts of the country. I would be interested to hear, you know, what you have to say about Eskom in regard to this issue. Do you want to come in now? Because you can. You can, and then maybe tackle the question around PBMR and the plans, nuclear plans, and then I can come back and deal with the other questions, and then I would also invite my colleagues to just briefly on the same issue in regard to Eskom.
You know, I think what we've seen, just one of the, in terms of, Eskom could also be thought of in the same way that you establish a power station and all the power gets evacuated elsewhere to be used for economic activity. But one of the things that we've really seen very starkly in recent times is at the Camden power station, where the town that was next to Camden when it got mothballed just died. And now that they've put it back up, we went out there to have a look, and just the development that's happening in the town supporting the power station, it's huge. I mean, they've got a lot of businesses now they never had for the last few years. Now, I know that Madupi Kusile, Madupi, is it Lepalale? In Lepalale, the support around it, all the businesses, because I think we do have some slides on, you know, power stations need catering, laundry, they need a whole lot of things. So there's a lot of development in those areas where you build a power station. And it brings a very important question to mind is, we've got this big 25-year build program. Where you locate the power plants in the country is actually where you will get economic development. It's not where the power flows to, yes, you know, the Gauteng and whatever. But in those provinces where you put the power stations, that's where you're going to get economic activity because they all need support. You know, there's people working there, they need housing, and all the things that go with people living in a place. So we have seen, especially where all the big power stations are in Mpumalanga, where you've got Standerton and all of these other cities, that towns that wouldn't be there if they didn't have the power stations there. So that's the one side. The other thing around nuclear is, Cabinet has taken that decision to support the IRP that has quite a big chunk of nuclear in it. We have been looking into the Japanese incident, and the conditions are very different. I don't think there's time to go into it, but we can send you a write-up on some of the safety issues around Coburg, for one. But also to know that any power stations that will be built in the future are actually a lot safer than the Japanese ones that had this problem. Just briefly, what we have picked up is that when they had the earthquake, the backup systems all kicked in. So they had generators running, and it was good. And then the tsunami hit. So you had this double, and that took everything out. Now, Coburg is designed up to a level 7 on the Richter scale, earthquake protected, and it's also designed to withstand a tsunami up to, I think it's 8 meters. It's been built to that height. So it has this protection, although what they're saying is the chances of us having a tsunami of that scale anyway is like almost pretty much non-existent. But you can be guaranteed that any nuclear we build going forward is going to be a lot safer than what they've got there. And some of the new plants actually don't even need electricity to circulate cooling. That's, just on PVMR, that is not being taken forward. But I suspect with the Japanese thing, there might be some renewed interest because just as a quick, the PVMR was designed that if you were to just walk away from it and there was nothing happening, it would just cool by itself. It wouldn't go up into those very high temperatures. But you know, that's kind of a moot point right now, maybe in the next 20 to 30 years.
Sorry, can I just come in while the deal that we are pursuing,
a memo of understanding with France, do you think there's a possibility we can reactivate or start investing again in the PPMR? As far as the nuclear is concerned.
Well, the short answer is no. France was really looking at a different technology. They had what was called a prismatic, so that was their investment. But also that's not something they're investing in anymore. But the MOU with France that was signed was for skills, and it actually wasn't on nuclear. It was on thermal, which is the coal technologies, etc.
DG, can I just maybe follow up on the questions asked about transport? The Department of Transport has an oversight on various other SOEs in the transport sector. We have an oversight over ATNS and AXA. What they're responsible for the regulation of the LF strategy, things that deal with the airline but not directly with the aviation companies themselves like we do. With regards to the Transnet branch line that Honourable Groenewald mentioned regarding the fact that it's been on the pipeline for quite a while, that is part of the Minister's performance agreement with the President, and we are on track for it to be delivered by the end of December 2012. I'm also from Lichtenberg in the Northwest, and we are mindful of the fact that the job creation that you mentioned is not quite a lot. But however, you might also be mindful of the fact that when the branch line targets kicked in December 2012, obviously the amount of work that will be created will obviously increase substantially based on that as well. Honourable Dow mentioned the concern that he had regarding job creation and the fact that Northern Cape was used as a base of cheap labor, or for lack of a better word to use. But however, as the DG mentioned, the fact that it's important that we stop working in a silo mentality regarding development, and that's where the role of the provincial government will come into place, whereby beneficiation of ores will be important to start industries in the region where most of the minerals come from. But that's a different scope of government that needs to deal with that as well. Thank you.
Okay, my colleagues are going to help with the questions now. I'll see. Well, yeah, Alex, yes. The honourable members will recall that basically the premise for that Dido settlement was to empower the resource community and also create a basis for future development and wealth creation within that community. So that involved a number of issues. There was a transfer of the land mining rights to the Richardsville community, which would then be the nucleus for the formation of a pooling and sharing joint venture with the community. The mining the farming assets that were previously with Alexco were transferred to the community, also to create that. There was some capitalization in terms of for those farms to create jobs for the local community. So effectively, I mean, the whole objective of the deed of settlement was to create a more sustainable future for that particular community. We have seen since the deed of settlement was signed, and particularly over the last 2 years, a situation where there were a lot of internal conflicts within the Richardsville community. Different factions have come up making various accusations against the incumbent CPA executive committee, various expectations in terms of what was supposed to transpire post the settlement. And we have seen a situation where I think the CPA and the various factions have spent more time in court, more time and resources, and you know we're very concerned about that. To the extent that at some point the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform actually indicated that he was going to mediate in this process to bring an end to all this conflict, because at the end of the day nothing was actually flowing from that to the members of the community. In the last 3 weeks, the Northern Cape High Court passed a court order appointing an interim administrator for the CPA. So the incumbent CPA executive has resigned, and the other faction has agreed to discontinue all the court action. The interim administrator would administer the affairs of the CPA for a period of up to 5 months, and also arrange for elections, legitimate elections, to be held, so that they start on a legitimate footing. So we're hoping that with that, things will be put to bed, and they can start on a good footing. We will be engaging with that administrator just to understand what the process going forward is in the detail of it, and ensure that it doesn't also delay the process, the activities that and milestones that we've been moving on in terms of the implementation of all the aspects of the deed of settlement, the township establishment, and the commencement of the pooling and sharing joint venture with Alexco. But we're hoping that sort of puts to bed some of those that infighting that we've seen, which has been very unhealthy for that community.
Let me deal with
a big question that was raised by the honorable member from the Eastern Cape about about what these transfers to SOEs achieving. Just to say that I think this question is part of the general concern with regard to SOEs, which is that these are supposed to be enterprises, these are supposed to be businesses run as efficiently and as effectively as any other business. All right? But they are not. For various reasons, they are not, including weaknesses in management, weaknesses in accountability of the management, governance problems of various sorts. They are not run effectively, and they occasionally get into trouble, into financial trouble, and then depend on the state. And that, so far, the state has come to their rescue, and that all of this is causing a lot of upset, because people are saying this money can be deployed elsewhere much more profitably for other policy objectives of government. I think that we have been caught up in that sort of paradigm, you know, with regard to SOEs. And I think that clearly we have to change that. We have to change that, because for as long as we are there, these SOEs are a millstone on our necks. But I think what we are proposing in the presentation, Chair, is a new approach. It's an approach that says that, by the way, let us not forget what these enterprises can deliver. All right? But how do we put them in a position that they deliver that? How do we put them in a position? This is a challenge that the department and the government faces. How do we put them in a position? And I think that it's going to require that you look beyond the fiscus. It is not going to be the fiscus. Because if anything, in fact, you know, the Minister of Finance has made it clear that, you know, and in his budget speech, you know, that there is not going to be easy money to bail out and to pay for these governance failures and lack of strategy, lack of vision, often, you know, that you see in the leadership of these enterprises. So we gotta find alternatives. And we think that the Department of Public Enterprises, because as we have the one unique mandate of being the only department that has a shareholder, we have the possibility to lead a process of finding alternatives, which will apply to the SOEs in our stable, but clearly others as well. So, and it's a pity the honourable member who asked about capitalisation has left. Because you capitalize not by transfers or various sorts of financial instruments that the Treasury often deploys, but by actually leveraging the private capital markets. There is an appetite. If you create the right policy and legal framework, you can get private money coming into supporting the balance sheets of these SOEs, so that they play the role that they have a possibility of playing, but they're not playing right now because we're all trapped in this paradigm of saying, you know, should they be getting money from the government? It's not the right debate to have. We need to transcend. We need to take the debate to the next level, and I think this is what we are proposing here, as a
has have a you know, if you look at the SAA, you know, they have a temporary effect of getting them out of trouble. But unless you build on that and really reposition them in a different space altogether, you are at risk of them slipping back. Because all of them that have had these sort of bailouts are at risk of slipping back. So I think this is what we're trying to achieve. And I don't know, Adrian, perhaps you want to come in and build on this point.
Sure. Well, I mean, just to give you some concrete examples of ways of funding projects. So the biggest asset, one of the biggest assets South African economy has got is the very big balance sheets of the big mining and industrial companies such as Anglo and Sasol. I'm not sure if you're aware, in December, Anglo invested about $4.5 billion in a port capacity in Australia. So one of the structures that one can do is basically mobilize customer investment to enhance logistics and electricity capacity. It has certain advantages for us because at the moment we're taking all the financial risk of these investments and if they don't come to the party, you know, we're going to be left carrying the baby. So it enhances their commitment to using the capacity we create, and this is particularly important in rail. I'm going to give you a couple of examples from overseas as to how they've leveraged this customer investment. In France, the nuclear program was funded through the top 30 or so industrials buying 25 years of power upfront. So this gave them security of supply for their power. It gave them a very predictable price for their power, but it also gave the electricity utility a big chunk of capital to invest. In Finland, basically a consortium of customers put money into a special purpose vehicle to build a nuclear power station, and depending on how much money they put in, they had various offtake rights, and they gave the national utility the operating license to actually manage the power station. So those are a couple of examples of overseas how you can leverage customer funding. The other area that I think we need to have much deeper exploration, which has already started in relationship to Eskom, is different kinds of financial instruments that are not debt, but that are not proper equity. It's known as preference shares or mezzanine finance, which we can look at how we can provide infrastructure-specific quasi-equity instruments, which will be very, very attractive, I think, for these financial institutions from a number of angles. Firstly, infrastructure provides very, very predictable cash flows. So the risk, particularly when you're dealing with Eskom and Transnet, of the money not flowing, I think, is relatively small, because at the end of the day, whether it's explicit or implicit, government will stand behind it. But also, here's an interesting fact for you. When we first did the input-output analysis associated with the bills program, the sector that benefited the most from the bills program wasn't the construction sector, it wasn't the equipment manufacturing sector, it was the financial services sector. They always take their cut, regardless of what the hell you're doing. So us putting money, additional money into infrastructure, is very, very attractive to them. So I think what we need to be doing over the next year is creatively exploring, you know, new ways of looking at how we finance things.
Yeah, all right. Let me just deal with three quick issues.
just for the record, because the members who asked them are not here, but they can obviously that's right, yeah. The one was with regard to the role of DOT, the Department of Transport, in regard to SAA and perhaps SAA Express in the aviation sector. Now, truth is that it's a very, very, very important role, because the Department of Transport is a department that negotiates these bilateral air services agreements, in terms of which, you know, countries have access into each other's aviation sector. But we, from public enterprises, have been very unhappy about what the pattern of those agreements have been. The Department of Transport, in our observation, has tended to give a lot of access to competitors of SAA, by the way, than it has been able to negotiate access for SAA in those markets. So the balance is not right, and part of the challenges of SAA right now are as a result of that. The second thing that I'd like to say in respect of that is that we recognize that it's important that we delineate with regard to SAA, where does the Department of Transport's role and mandate begin and end, and where does public enterprises start? Because where an SOE operates with ambiguity as to who has what mandate over its activities, as it were, it opens the gap, because when it suits them, they'll go to this one department. When it doesn't suit them, they go to another. And I think we must not allow that to happen. I think we need to close, you know. So that goes for transport. Communications, because we have Infraco, which is partly regulated by Department of Communications, and we are the shareholder department. So there is a lot of ambiguity that's sitting there that we need to sort out. And so part of when we spoke about policy and regulatory clarity, it's really in respect of these. And there are many other examples. The second set of issues. Oh, let me just say that in relation to that, see, we wanted to locate that clarity in legislation. And so you will be aware, as a committee, that the department had proposed legislation called the Government Shareholder Management Model, which would have been legislation that clarifies these things and streamlines things, as it were, distinguishes the shareholder responsibility and gives it firm legal basis, as opposed to the role of, you know, policy and regulatory departments. We think a lot of value has gone into the drafting of that legislation. We hope that once the presidential review on state-owned enterprises has done its work, that we can hopefully come back to that legislation, because it was stopped at cabinet level, because Treasury was also coming up with something similar around the PFMA, or at least to what the PFMA amendment that Treasury was proposing was dealing with the same sorts of issues. And TTI was also, you know, driving the New Companies Act, and those overlaps created problems and resulted in that legislation being stopped. But it's something which we'll get back to going forward. On skills, we share fully the concern of the honourable member who spoke about skills. I think that there is a revival of massive interest
in the role of SOEs in the skills formation and human capital formation in the economy. We are partnering here with the Department of Higher Education and Training to leverage, you know, the skills fund, because a lot of these SOEs, you know, they have the capacity and the facilities, but they have not been budgeting for skills development. So now we are encouraging them to go back into that space and availing support. And hopefully going forward, they will only need to budget a lot more for this. But I think that the is no second guessing the importance of skills. So everything that we've said so far is underpinned by very firm commitments to skills development and recognition that without that, you know, we can't achieve most of these things. I think that covers, you know, all of the issues, Chair, that were asked up to this point. So I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thank you very much, DG. You know, I'm very happy that the members are happy, because what you presented, actually, usually we don't break so early. What you presented is what really the members were looking for. But we still have some few slides. We will go through those slides. Few, like Okusile, this one that is on here. We will go through them. If there are questions, members, we will send the question in writing to the department. And then the department will respond. But I want to say, DG, that we're still going to meet, because actually we wanted to go to Rechtersveld because of the situation there. That's where we wanted to go. And our worry also is SAFCON. If we can get maybe information researched on how we... at this point in time, SAFCOL is. We also want to see maybe if we do an oversight, we go there and talk to the department on how we see SAFCOL, how can maybe the department assist SAFCOL, because we do these things. We give people the right to be free on this state owned, and like Rechtersveld, that's why I'm calling Mr. Kamingoma Alexko, because the last time he was with us here with the committee, it wasn't nice between himself and us, because the information that we were getting, it wasn't according to what we understand, that the information we know about Alex. So we will still communicate with the department, so that we are looking at going to oversight, but we will inform the department when we will be going there. But on that note, I would like to thank everyone, DG, through you, in the department, who is actually putting the department into the right perspective. Thank you very much. And once more, we congratulate you and we welcome you to our family. And welcome Zwakali. Zwakali. He was with us. He was the secretary to the public service, of which we serve also. So now he thought he's deserting us, but he was coming, you know, back to us indirectly. Welcome, Zwakali. Thank you. Yeah.
No, Chair, no, thanks very much indeed. We really appreciate the support of the committee, and we are available
at your disposal to engage further. I realize that we didn't have time to delve into all of the issues. We observed the comments around employment equity, and it's something which I think we should just agree to stay engaged on going forward, because we have some performance to do in that space, and as we do that, we will obviously update you. And I'm hoping, Chair, that through the year, you will create opportunities for us to bite certain things in much more detail, because this was we covered everything here today, but going forward you can lift any of the matters that we place for more focused engagement. And I hope that when you do go to Thunder Bay, to that community, that I'll be able to come and join you, because I myself have not yet had the opportunity to go there. So please remember to inform us when you go there, because we'll have to be there anyway to support you. Thank you very much.
The other outstanding oversight was Transnet. Now that we have the DG, I think Transnet, when we say we're coming, they won't do this. Yes.
Sure.